in Genesis 23. It's a different chapter. I was telling Fish and Doc Holliday before y'all got here that won't really be a sermon per se tonight, but we're going to look at it and break it down a little bit. I say 23. I'm dyslexic. 32, right? Is that where I said, Fish? It's where it's supposed to be, right? So we're at the end almost of 32. I was thinking about this the other day because it's going to be weird. We're not going to, not weird, but we're not going to ever finish this by the end of 18, because you know when December rolls around and Thanksgiving. But it'll never get us all the way through 19, but my plan is to just go through it till we get through it. And if we end in April, we end in April, and we'll just start something new there. Doesn't have to be a fresh start, I don't guess. But so we've been tracking this family going back to Abram, and then God changed his name to Abraham, and then Abraham had Isaac through the promise, and then Isaac had twins, Jacob and Esau, and Jacob come out holding on to his brother's heel, and ever since then, he'd been a deceiver and a trickster. And so tonight, we see what most scholars say is the conversion of Jacob. Up to this point, we could say Jacob is not a believer. He's not a follower. And I know that, you know, and now we talk about being a believer and a follower of Jesus. Technically, Jesus hadn't come to earth then. But Jacob was not a follower of Yahweh. Or even Elohim, as we see. He was more of a follower of Jacob and his own carnal desires. And this passage, it symbolizes a few things. And so when we read it and just read it for what it is, it's one of those passages like there's got to be something maybe I'm missing here. I don't understand it. So we're going to try to look at that tonight. And again, in Genesis 32, it says that night, remember, the night was this, that he's going to meet Esau. He's left his father-in-law Laban. He's taken his two wives, both of their maidservants. So he has four wives. He's got technically 12 children. He hasn't had Benjamin yet. And so he's sent these people on ahead to pacify Esau. We talked about that last week. How he wasn't really trusting in God. He sent all these things ahead to bribe him. And he's eventually going to break down and, or, you know, break his family into different divisions, and you'll see who he favors. But this is what they're talking about when I said that night. That night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two maidservants, and his 11 sons, and he crossed the ford at Jabbok. Now, we're not going to break this down, but there's a lot in the Hebrew. There's a lot of similarities. There's a lot of play on the words here. You've got Jacob and Jabbok, and then there's one word a little bit, and they're all almost spelled the same in the Hebrew, the Y-A-B-A-Q and all that stuff. But the first question I would think about here as I read that, I would hope some of my women, it would jump out to us, is where's Dinah at? No mention of Dinah. We don't know where she's at because it says he took his 11 sons and cross the river. We don't know if Dinah stayed back on the other side of the river. We don't know if Dinah even made the trip. She might have stayed with Laban. We don't know, but we just know what the Bible gives us. We also know, based on scholars, not that we would just know, that this river is 23 miles north of the Dead Sea, and it flows into the Jordan River. It's about a 50-mile-long river, and it's at its peak, I think it was at 1,500 feet, and then it goes down below sea level at some points. It's a winding river in these fords, and it makes it where it's actually easy to cross in certain areas. Because when we think about it, you know, when we think about rivers today, if all of us go to the Tennessee River and there's no bridge, it'd be like, hey, I'm going to let y'all cross the river. You'd be like, what? But there are certain areas here where somebody could actually cross it. Now, don't know exactly why, but events in this chapter are all happening at night. If you go back to 13, it says you don't have to do it, Fish. He spent the night there, and from what with him, he had selected a gift for his brother Esau. And then in 21, so Jacob's gifts went on ahead of him, but he himself spent the night in the camp. So this, if we were watching a movie play out with this whole scene would be at night. We don't know if God's trying to teach us something here, show us something. It could be that Jacob, the deceiver, you know, most deception you know, happens at night. And, you know, Jesus even talked about that. The light brings forth. We don't know for sure, but this chapter we know is set at nighttime for the most part. It says in 23, after he had sent them across the stream, so that kind of lets you know it wasn't full-blown river there, the part of it, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone. Now, before we go any further, we don't know. Again, there's two different, and it really doesn't matter on what side, north or south, he was on. We don't know why Jacob did this. He sent all of his family and all his possessions over there. It could be that he thought Esau might catch them in the night and that Esau would have mercy on them because they were all innocent. And that maybe seeing his family and seeing all this stuff that Esau would change his mind. And so he stayed on the other side of the river. That way, maybe if he heard them coming, he could escape. You just never know with Jacob, to be honest, at this point, why he chose to do this. So verse 24b says, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. Now, this is where it gets kind of interesting, and we start thinking, okay, was it a man? Why would a man wrestle with him? Is this like, you know, The Rock or Stone Cold? Or why would somebody wrestle with Jacob? Dad has taught for years, and other people teach, that the wrestling symbolizes prayer. That if you go to Ephesians 6, that we struggle not with flesh and blood, but we wrestle with, you know, and so that's what, you know, Dad says it symbolizes here, is that Jacob is wrestling with God. It's a form of, you know, he's struggling with his inner self, so he's praying in a sense, but he's struggling with letting go of this self-will, which we'll talk about here in a moment. But in 31, what it talks about here in 24, it says, so Jacob was left alone and a man wrestled with him. Now in 31, which we'll skip to real quick, I wrote that down wrong. Fish in 30. Is it 30? Yes, in 30. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, it is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. That's Elohim there. Catfish, if you can, go. This is one of the ones, and I'll give you time. Go to Hosea 12:5. This is the other reference to that verse when we think about, when we try to break down what it is, because some people, it says a man here, then it says Elohim. In Hosea 12:5, it says he struggled. It's talking about Jacob. He struggled with an angel and overcame him. He wept and begged for his favor. He found him at Bethel and taught with him there. So we see fish go to judge. Well, I don't have it. Never mind. You can just go back because I don't have the exact verse for you. I got chapters. But in Genesis 18 and 19, go back to Abraham. Think about it there when the three men come to see him. And they're talking to him and Sarah. And it said, you know, and they were angels, but they appeared as men because Abraham and Sarah, you know, were asking them their name. They didn't know what they were. Then in Judges 6, Gideon saw an angel and he was in the form of a man. And then we talked about this a little bit last week. And in Judges 13, when Samson's parents, Manoah, and they saw, and, you know, they're like, let us cook something for you. They weren't startled because they were asking him his name. What's your name? They thought he was a man, and he was in the form of a man. So it's not that angels can't take the form of a man. And it's probably the most likely answer here that it was an angel in the form of a man, and Jacob is saying this angel represents God. And so when he says, I've seen God face to face, that's probably, to be honest, the most logical explanation for all of this. So Jacob is wrestling with an angel who is not a fallen angel. He is an angel from God. So he would be representing God. And now we get to the point of why in the world would this happen? When the man saw that he could not over... Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped a verse, didn't I? So Jacob was left alone. Oh, no. And a man wrestled with him until daybreak. Now, well, let me go on. We'll talk about that in a minute. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that the hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, let me go, for it is daybreak. Now, if you go back to 29:10, you'll see Jacob's Herculean strength. Remember how he rolled that stone away? We talked about it a few weeks ago, how it said that several shepherds couldn't do it or it would take several to do it. But yet Jacob rolled it away himself, because we were so astounded that Jacob had been the tent dweller all his life. He was the studious one. Esau was the outdoorsman. When Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of his uncle Laban, Laban's sheep, he went away and rolled the stone away from the mouth of the well, whereas she said, oh, I got to get several shepherds to do this. And so Jacob, being impressed, you know, with her beauty, wanted to show off. But we see that Jacob has some strength about him. So the guy couldn't do anything with him. The man saw that he could not overpower him. And so what did he do? The man struck him. And you know, some people say that was to avoid outright defeat. You know, I guess it's kind of like a team getting shut out 31-0, and they kick a field goal at the end. They're like, well, you didn't shut us out. This guy, and I don't think it's really that far, but this guy touched him. Now, there's some usages. You can go to Job 1:11 and Job 2:5 if you want to, and Isaiah 6:7. I'm throwing a lot of stuff at you. This will be it, though, after this. Job 1:11, Job 2:5. There's some different usages for the word touch. It's the same wording here, the same word, but the Bible uses them a little bit different. So in Job 1:11, it said that Satan wanted to touch Job's life, which you would know would mean to be destroyed. In Job 2:5, it talked about how he touched, you know, how he did that to his children, and the children all died in that one incident. And then, so there's that version of it here, but then the same word in Isaiah 6:7 talked about how God touched his lips in order to impart, you know, something for him to speak. So it's sometimes, you know, it's used different than other usages. So it's probably somewhere in the middle, to be honest. There you go. Stretch out your hand and strike everything he has, and he will surely curse you to your face. And stretch out your hand and strike is the usage of touch. And then 2:5, stretch out your hand and strike again. And then if you want to, fish Isaiah 6:7. If you don't worry about it. Those are the same uses in Isaiah 6:7. With it, he touched my mouth and said, see, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away. So different usages. But when we go back to here, it's probably somewhere in between. He touched, not a violent touch like Satan, but obviously not touching of the lips and imparting scripture. It's that, but he did touch it. And so his socket was out of place. Now, when it says that, you know, he wrestled with him to daybreak, we have to, there is some, a little bit of symbolism there, because at dawn, we understand that it's kind of half dark and half light, maybe more dark than light, but it's a little bit of both. We see that in this Transjordan region that they're in, there are some God-fearing people, but there's a lot of people that are not God-fearing here as well. And then we see Jacob, who to this point in his life has been as much carnal as anything. He's lied and he's deceived, but then there's been some good about him. So Jacob's kind of this half and half, just like the daybreak. Now, it could also be as simple as this. He was just trying to hide his identity from him, that he was wrestling with Jacob, and when he saw there was daybreak, he said, let it go. But Jacob replied, I will not let you go unless you bless me. Now, it's kind of a weird request that, you know, you're wrestling with somebody, literally wrestling, but we think, you would have to think at this point, Jacob kind of knows what's going on. Why would he ask for a blessing at this point? He already has Isaac's blessing. He knows that he's already deceived his father into getting his blessing, but yet he asked for this blessing. It's probably, again, if you go back to the first part of this chapter, Jacob has not fully trusted in God. He's still, and so he's probably scared of Isaac. There's this point where he's like, if I get blessed by God, then I know I'm going to be protected. And so he asked for the blessing, and the man asked him, what is your name? Jacob, he answered. Now, if this truly is an angel of God, and we believe it is, don't you believe that he knows Jacob's name? He knows exactly what he's doing. So why would he do that? It's kind of like when you catch your children in the act of doing something, and you said, who spilled this? When you know who spilled the Kool-Aid or the Pepsi or whatever, you're like, who spilled that? You just see them, they'll tell you. Or you're just making them verbalize it. And so he verbalized his name. There's a point for this because we're going to see there's a name change. And so he tells him Jacob, which is, you know, is, again, one word in the Hebrew. And so he uses it. He tells him his name. And so then 28, the man said, your name will no longer be that. Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God. And I've always misread this verse, because I always thought it said, if you struggle with God and won. That's not what it says, because you've struggled with God and you am with humans and have overcome with humans. That's not the best translation. I'm not getting on you, because that's the 2011. The 84 version has it a little bit better. It says, because you've struggled with God and with men and have overcome. It just reads a little bit different, that the overcoming part is with men. And to this point, he has, right? He's overcome with Isaac. He's won that victory. He's won with Esau. He's won with Laban. He's won everywhere he's went. There's this tenacity about him. He's strong. He's wrestled with the man here, and he's overcome. Now, the reading of this, verse 28, is a little bit tough for us in the Hebrew. This is a symbol of a spiritual metamorphosis, if you will, a changing in Jacob at this point. And the actual reading, and the oldest scholars disagree on this, that El is for God, E-L, and the reading would actually probably say El will rule, or God will rule, or let El rule. And so instead of that, but your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome. So, and when reading with that, we would say that now you are, that God will rule in your life, or you will let God rule in your life. The verb was only used one other time in the entire Old Testament, so it's hard to kind of get a comparison. But understand this, Jacob has been in charge of his life to this point. Jacob has called all the shots. And what the angel is telling him here is, you're no longer in charge. God will rule in your life. Now, this doesn't automatically generate any changes in Jacob. It doesn't make him change in his character, but it's telling him that he will make these changes. And so verse 29 says, Jacob says, please tell me your name. Notice this is the second time the angel asked for his name, even though he knew it. Now Jacob says, please tell me your name. But he replied, why do you ask my name? Then he blessed him here. Verse 29 is kind of saying this. First of all, why do you need to know? Why do you need to know my name, Jacob? And then there's also a sense of God saying, Jacob, don't you know who I am? This is kind of Jacob trying to get reassurance, how we do. God, just make sure you're here before I give this money to church. God, just making sure you're here before I take this step in a relationship. God, just making sure you're here. And God says, look, I'm here. I've been here all along. Don't you know I am? Don't you realize who I am? And verse 30 says, so Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, it is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. And there's a future sense to that, that he knows now that God's going to take care of him with Esau. That he knows God has spared his life, not just there. The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. We're not going to really get into that. I read a really different something from a scholar, but most people say is the hip. Some people say it could be because of the thigh, of the symbolic part in the Old Testament, because Abraham made people put their hand on their thigh, and some other thing, that it could actually be part of the male genitalia, that, and that's why he was limping. But most people think it was a limp because of the hip, just true to what it is, because of this area where there's nothing is. And therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched in the section. Now, going on to the Old Testament, we don't hear anything about those dietary restrictions of the hip and the tendons in the hip. Again, but we do read about Jacob's transformation and about Jacob's conversion. And that's what this story is about, or this part of our story is about, how Jacob struggled with God. Jacob had the fleshly desire. Jacob had always done things his way. And then this angel wrestled.